This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Casey Johnson is the basketball man from the Chicago Tribune. Hey, Casey, how are you?
Hey, Casey.
Morning, guys. What's going on?
Well, you know, I got to tell you, that wasn't a great loss, and I don't know how to say it, but you got to be able to beat teams in this league, and you got to be better than teams, and that's a team that you should be better than, quite frankly.
It was a step back, clearly, at both ends at an inopportune time, because the rest of this week is at Celtics, at Bucks, and home versus the Raptors. They really, since the Warriors blowout, the Bulls have been playing pretty well for a six-game stretch there. They've made some strides in the defensive end. Zach had obviously been otherworldly at the offensive end. They looked like, you know, they were in games, they were competitive, they were engaged. And beyond the loss, which is, you know, as you mentioned, Mully, bad enough to a pretty average Mavericks team, although I like some of their young pieces, but beyond the loss, they just took a step back in terms of their effort and their engagement. They had a good first quarter, but then they just didn't sustain it. Their transition defense was poor again. Zach talked afterward about, you know, the heavy burden that he's having to carry, and you know, I thought last night it showed. So bad loss all the way around.
Casey, yesterday the news came out that Lauri Markkanen, the timetable is going to be closer to 8 to 10 weeks that he'll miss rather than 6 to 8, which was originally the prognosis. Is the extension or maybe the delay in his return have anything to do with the fact that they are so bad? And is that independent of that? And how was his kind of the extended time being away explained?
No setback from what I've, you know, not only what they said publicly, but from what I've been able to gather from talking to people, no setback, just really more in line with the conservative nature they're taking with all their injuries. And sure that leads to speculation as to,
yeah,
you know whether or not that's out of necessity or out of, you know, possibility or what have you. You know, you're not going to get anybody to say that. You know, Lauri is in good spirits. He's not talking to us on the record, but he's around a lot. And, you know, he said he feels good, but he hasn't done much yet. I mean, he's shooting from 5 feet, so the elbow doesn't have full range. I mean, I don't know if it has full range of motion. It must, because he's lifting weights with it, but he doesn't have full range of basketball motion. He's not extending it out. So, you know, there's a slim chance he still could get back closer to that, you know, first original 8 week window, but I think it's going to be closer to 10. So, you know, all we've been told is no setback and just the Bulls being very conservative with the injury.
I said this morning, and David jumped on me, and it wasn't meant as an insult, but when you are when you have Ryan Arcidiacono in the starting lineup, to me, I mean, he's a great story. I love the try hard. I love the get in the way and all the rest of it, but it just tells you that you are down talent-wise, and that's not an insult of him. It's just, I don't look at him and say, wow, NBA starting point guard. And the fact that he is in that lineup is an indication that they're injured, that campaign can't play, that they are kind of backed up on players. And that's not an insult to him, because I think he's a great story. I just don't want him as my starting point guard, and I don't want him to be that much a part of the offense.
Look, this is the classic situation is, you know, how do you really judge Fred and his coaching staff right now? Let's all take a step back and remember, even before the season, what was Vegas picking this team to win? 32 games? Mm-hmm. I mean, so this team was projected to be bad at full strength, and they're missing four of their top eight rotation players, arguably their most, you know, if not their best, their 1A player in Lauri Markkanen, their best perimeter defender in Chris Dunn. You know, say what you want about Denzel Valentine. I know a lot of people are down on him. He shoots 40% from the three-point line, okay? So he stretches the floor. He's also a very good facilitator with that second unit, a playmaker. Bobby Portis has emerged as a bona fide, you know, threat offensively and is a very good defensive rebounder and is their best talker on the back line of defense. So, you know, I just don't understand. You know, it's hard to judge.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, Molly. It's like, you know, there are games where you just look out there, and there are a couple of games where they're starting Chandler Hutchinson, who, you know, I think could be a decent player, but he's not obviously an NBA starter yet. They're starting Chandler Hutchinson at four, Carter at five, and at the time Cameron Payne was starting. And you're looking out there, that's three-fifths of the starting lineup. Justin Holiday was a fourth. Justin Holiday's having a nice season. How many teams in the NBA would Justin Holiday start for?
Right.
Two?
And that's all I mean, and it's not an insult to anyone, but I mean, I'm watching them, and they're running the floor, and they're, you know, they got the whole spread offense thing going, and then they're jacking up threes and missing. So it's kind of like, oops, there's the offense. Right. Hey, that's how it's supposed to look. Oh, they can't hit a
pace
shot.
And space.
Yeah, what you can judge, and this is what, you know, has been a season-long theme, is, you know, the nights like last night, or the to me, you know, I know the Warriors loss got so much attention, and rightfully so, because it was extreme. But I keep pointing this, I think I've said this to you guys before, the road loss in Charlotte offended my basketball sensibilities, because guys just didn't look like they were engaged or even hustling back or what have you. Now, that's where you can judge this team, regardless of who's playing. You have to have commitment. You have to have engagement. You have to have a sense of intensity. You have to run back after turnovers. And, you know, they took a step back to me in that department last night.
Casey, your professional opinion on two things, which every night I think you watch the Bulls and you have this from a fan's perspective, you wonder. Zach LaVine's shot selection and Wendell Carter Jr.'s consistency.
I think Zach's shot selection has been very good overall. It's clear. I mean, he's getting blitzed, you know, double teamed, basically every possession now. And last night, Dallas did a nice job of building a wall behind that double team. So Zach was, I mean, he had seven turnovers. He definitely forced them. But here's the thing. It almost goes back to Mully's point, David, is, you know, where's Zach LaVine supposed to turn? I mean, he doesn't have a lot of options right now. And I think he's played remarkably efficiently, given his usage rate and how much the ball is in his hands. He didn't have a great game last night. He missed some easy shots early, and then the turnovers happened late. And he was the first to admit it. He was a little bit more down than he has been after last night's game with us. He's very hard on himself. He took a long time to shower. But then he was also very good by the end of the session. He'd warmed up. But overall, I think his shot selection has been very good. And look, if he has forced a couple, he's earned that right, because he's scored the ball at a very, very efficient clip. And I like, in two of the victories, the Knicks game and the Hornets home game, he's won the game by attacking the basket in the final second and getting the line. So that's another big area of growth for him. And as far as Wendell, yeah, he picked a bad time to play. You know, arguably his worst game of the season last night was shortly after Rick Carlisle told us that the Mavericks would have drafted him at number five if they hadn't traded up to get Doncic. But, you know, what's funny about Wendell is you say that, and then you look at his stat line. He's got 7-10 and two blocks,
right?
You know, which isn't a great stat line, but it just shows the impact this guy can have. And he was really hampered by foul trouble and just never really made a consistent impact throughout last night's game.
Obviously, the big story in the NBA right now is the Jimmy Butler trade. And, you know, we were talking about it this morning, the idea that the Bulls got more out of Minnesota for Jimmy than Minnesota got out of the 76ers for Jimmy. And part of that is the expiring contract and the fact
sure.
that he wants to be a free agent and all that, we understand. But, you know, I know this is another dumb comment on my part, but I haven't seen the Bulls payoff yet from the Butler trade, because none of those guys are healthy together. None of them on the floor together. Not saying they didn't win the trade. Just saying, as I recall, they were winning when Jimmy was here, and now they're not winning when they made that trade. So I think it's a hard one to say, okay, that's it, it's over. And I think the 76ers are a significantly better team with Jimmy than they were before that trade.
Well, a couple things. I mean, I'm definitely, I think it's a good point, Molly. I think I fall into that trap sometimes myself. It's just kind of anointing the Bulls of, as having won that trade. And you're right. I mean, Don LaVine and Markkanen still have only played 12 games and 255 minutes together. And I've got that number memorized because that's from last season. And they haven't played together this season. So they're nice individual pieces. You've seen obviously huge flashes from Markkanen and Dunn, and now LaVine is showing that he's all the way back from the ACL, but you still haven't seen it, the three of them, from the three of them together. So that's fair. You know, it is clear to me that the Bulls, obviously by trading with a year extra on the deal, were able to get significantly better assets and young assets. But yeah, the Bulls still need to prove it can work together on the floor. You know, there's a lot of split opinion about how Jimmy's going to work in Philadelphia. I mean, it's unquestionably three of the best players at their respective positions. I do think Embiid is more tough-minded than Towns and will probably take to Jimmy's leadership style and/or stand up to Jimmy's leadership style more effectively than Towns did. So I'm not as concerned about the locker room fit, but I'll say this, Saric and Covington are those type of players you need around stars in the sense that they know their roles, you know exactly what they're going to get from them. They don't try to do more than they're asked to do, and they help space the floor. And those, you know, similar to the Sixers losing Ilyasova and Bellinelli in the offseason, which were critical pieces similar to Saric and Covington, I think that's a big reason why Philadelphia has kind of gotten off to its uneven start. Talent always wins in this league, and I do think that eventually Butler, Simmons, and Embiid can be very good together, and you can always get shooting over time, let's say if Jimmy signs a five-year deal. But I think initially there's going to be some growing pains there just because they're going to miss Arch and Covington a lot.
Casey doesn't have a lot to do with the Bulls, but there is interest in the Timberwolves because of Tom Thibodeau. And what happened with Butler demanding a trade and then getting a trade and the way it was handled – it didn't reflect all that great on Thibs, and I think that you see a lot of the reaction to it. Did the way it was handled confirm the worst of what people have said about Tom Thibodeau, or was an example of a coach trying to be loyal to a player who duped him?
Well, it's a good question, Dave. I'll say this, you know, in Tom's defense, I'll say, as we all have seen with these other sagas, you know, the Kyrie Irving, the Kawhi Leonard, These requests are typically made in the off season. Now the Kawhi one lasted a long time and was ugly, but it was not made on the eve of a season. So Minnesota was in a very, very untenable position. That said, you know, you can make the debate, was Josh Richardson in a first round pick a better offer, which was ultimately pulled because Tom, in his mind, really thought he could make this work. That's just how he is. He gets something in his mind, and he thinks he's going to be able to just conquer it with sheer work and will. And he really thought that he was going to be able to get Jimmy to buy in. The Timberwolves were going to take off, and then you're going to put Jimmy in a situation like, do I really want to leave this? It was clear that wasn't going to happen, but that's what Tom believed. I'll say also this. Tom could have never predicted that Jimmy would bail on him. I mean, when he made the trade with the Bulls initially, And that is that does reflect ultimately badly on Tom because, you know, you couldn't have predicted it, but you know, he ended up giving up quite a bit of young assets for him, and then he only got one season out of him. Now it was a season that helped change briefly the culture up there, but you know, they got a lot of work to do up there.
Casey, we'll let you go. Boogie, Kyrie, Jimmy, KD, Kawhi, Klay Thompson, these are all free agent possibilities at the end of the year. And the Bulls have tons of money. Now, both L.A. teams have money. Both New York teams have money. Anybody coming to the Bulls? Is there any is there anything on the horizon that I haven't thought through enough?
There's one name you can scratch off that list, and that's Jimmy Butler.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Not happening.
All right.
How about Zion Williamson?
Yeah, exactly. I think, look, in Philadelphia, this Butler trade is an example of a franchise that, you know, had an attractive situation, tried to add via free agency, whether it be Paul George or Kawhi.
Yep.
Didn't get either, and then pulled the trigger on a big trade. I think the Bulls really still believe the star they need is hopefully on their roster in LaVine or Markkanen, and they need to either add via the draft or another trade. I don't see them as attractive enough to draw one of those front line guys like KD or Jimmy. Yeah. I mean, a nice secondary piece, sure. But there's also, you mentioned the Bulls, they're going to have a lot of money. There are a lot of teams that are going to have a lot of money.
Right.
And last summer was their chance to kind of stand out, and they got Jabari Parker, which...
Okay, so
that's next time.
We're working on something different.
So my new plan is to just tank for the Dookies. I got you.
There you go. Thanks.
All right, KC.
All right, KC. Thanks
a lot.
Buddy.
Good stuff.
That's KC Johnson from the Chicago Tribune.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.